This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Now we have Te Piringa Kararehe, the animal shelter, with Annie and Kirsty on Plains FM.
Kia ora rā koutou, nau mai, haere mai, ki te piringa kararehi, ko Annie tēnei. I'm hosting solo today as Kirsty's away with her whānau, touring te Waipounamu. Kia marutou, tō haerenga Kirsty, ka kite koe e tērā marama. Today we're going to be looking at some treats for summer, and I'm going to be discussing some books for summer reading too, particularly related to kararehi or animals. And I'll be sharing a recipe from the Rawson Vegan Cookbook for pizza for summertime. I'm also going to do a bit of a rave about Aotearoa's attitude towards possums. And in particular, I'm going to look at some of the ways that our popular culture is encouraging children in particular to have less empathy, not just for possums, but basically towards any animals, because I think it's kind of hard for them to tell the difference between one cute animal and another. And I've also chosen some choice waiata for us today. Most of these waiata are covers by famous kai waiata or singers. One is particularly awesome. It's the latest waiata from Aotearoa's own Rhea Hall. And the video accompanying this song is like nothing I've seen before. So I'm going to talk more about this akuanei. To start us off, here's the Dixie Chicks cover of Fleetwood Mac's Landslide. He waiata a tahua. Enjoy.
Can I handle the seasons of my
Welcome back to Te Piringa Kararehe. That was the Dixie Chicks with Landslide, an original by Fleetwood Mac. And now, because we're coming into Raumati, or summer, I thought it'd be really cool to just give you some ideas for summer reading. All of these books that I'm going to talk about during the show today involve human-animal relationships and animals. And I'm first of all going to talk about books that are being published by Ashland Press. Now, Ashland Press is a small publishing company that operates out of Oregon in the United States. And one of its publishers is Midge Raymond. She came here last year and gave a talk at Canterbury University about this publishing firm and how they dedicated to only publishing books about animal advocacy or environmental issues. And when I say books, I'm talking about novels, anthologies, basically fiction or creative works. So I thought I'll start by talking about Midge Raymond's own novel, which is called My Last Continent. And it was published by Ashland Press recently in 2016. Let me tell you a little bit about it. In fact, if you read another book called We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves by Karen Joy Fowler, which I can't really tell you what that's about because it would spoil the story, but that's another awesome book you might want to read over summer. Anyway, Fowler has reviewed Midge Raymond's book called My Last Continent, and she says that it's a love story about the Antarctic and the creatures, humans included, who are at home there, half adventure, half allergy, and wholly recommended. So let me give you a little bit of an overview of this story. So it is only at the end of the world, among the glacial mountains, cleaving icebergs and frigid waters of Antarctica, where Deb Gardner and Carla Sullivan feel at home. For the few blissful weeks they spend each year studying the habits of emperor penguins, Deb and Carla can escape the frustrations and sorrows of their separate lives and find solace in their work and in each other. As a new travel and research season begins, Deb and Keller are ready to play tour guide to the passengers on the small expedition ship that ferries them to their research destination. But this year, Keller fails to appear on board. Then shortly into the journey, Deb's ship receives an emergency signal from a cruise liner that's hit desperate trouble in the ice-choked waters of the Southern Ocean. And Deb learns Keller is among the crew on board. As Deb and Keller's trouble histories collide with this catastrophic present, Midge Raymond's phenomenal novel takes us on a voyage deep into the wonders of the Antarctic and the mysteries of the human heart. So that's kind of the publisher's overview of this book. And I can thoroughly recommend it too for some summer reading, particularly if you're interested in Antarctica and the animals there and you want to feel a little bit cooled down over summer because it is set in one of the coldest places on Earth. So that's the first book I wanted to sort of introduce you to. It might be kind of cool for your summer reading. The second, also from Ashland Press, is an anthology of short fiction about the lives of animals and humans. And the book itself is called Among Animals. It's got a beautiful cover. I'm not actually sure what the creature on the cover is. It looks kind of like a fox, but I'm not too sure. It's obviously a North American mammal. So this anthology is all about stories that affirm the bond between humans and animals. And it's a diverse collection of stories, and it's kind of exploring the way that we live among, but often also in conflict with our non-human counterparts. And the stories in this anthology feature animals from familiar, like dogs and cats, to the exotic, like emus. And in these stories, animals are both the rescuers and the rescued. So in this anthology, we get to see glimpses of the world through the eyes of a zookeeper, a shelter worker, a penguin researcher, a neighbourhood stray, among many others, all highlighting the ways in which humans and animals understand and can challenge each other. And if you're interested in this book, Among Animals, Canterbury University's own human-animal studies expert, Philip Armstrong, has a story in this His is actually the story about the neighbourhood stray, and he writes this from the perspective of the dog, or from the dog's point of view. So that's a suggestion for summer as well. And while I'm talking about anthologies, the third book I want to talk about now, which you might be interested in, is by Richard Grossman. It's about G-R-O-S-S-M-A-N. And the book is called The Animals. And it features on the front a picture of a wolf who has been covered in snow in the depth of winter. So again, another book that has references to winter, might cool you down a bit in summer. Before I read to you the start of the book, I just thought I'd let you know a little bit more about it. So The Animals was written between 1974 and 1977, so quite a while ago, and appeared in hardcover first in 1983. It contains 500 poems, 200 animal poems, and 300 shepherd poems. Now, Grossman's books, this is the author, Richard Grossman, he is a very generous author. He donates most of his books, the profits of the books go towards helping people living with AIDS. And he also helps a national hospice organisation. He also places these books at patients' bedsides. And he gives them to environmental organisations and nature conservancies. And the National Wildlife Federation has also used this book, The Animals, as a gift to major trust donors. So it's a really a well-respected book. I really like it because it's come back into press now several decades after these poems were first written. And it's a really interesting kind of examination of human-animal relationships. It's basically described as an environmental Bible, and it's set in a mythical field where a shepherd engages in a series of discussions on a wide range of issues, both practical and mystical, with his flock of 200 different creatures. And these creatures range from an amoeba through to a whale. And actually on the covers of the book, it tells you all the animals that are covered in this book. So I'm just looking through, it's in alphabetical order. So the various species that feature in this book include the gnat, the gerbil, the flea, the finch, the flamingo, the gopher, the gorilla. That's just in the G's. And then there's the centipede, the cat, the cricket, coyote, coral, crows, crocodiles. Let me go to see if there's any under Z. Zebra and zebu. I'm not even sure what a zebu is. And let me see what else is in here. The shrew, the shrimp, the silkworm, the sloth, snail, swan, the tick, the turkey, turtle, even the unicorn, vampire bats, vipers, going through the V's now. But as you can see, he basically has written this long series of poems focusing on different species and their discussion with this shepherd. So let me just start you off at the very beginning of this book, and I'm just going to read to you from page 2. The animals were lost above the clay. Those who lived could not sense the old bodies hovering there. The heat that warmed them was bubbling off, and when it rained it washed them away, parts and holes. The shepherd said, "Gather round, my children, so that we may embark on a search for what is true. Art will be our ark, not the art of desire, showing her colours so we may see the only thing we can see, but the art of strength, hard, magnificent and sparse. We shall forge a change in the mind and come to understand the spirit as animal." So that's the start of this book. And, you know, I really recommend it. It's absolutely awesome. So that's Richard Grossman's The Animals. It's kind of an anthology about different species written in a long, long poem. And the book itself is 397 words. So it covers all these different species and the shepherd's talk of them throughout it. So, yeah, check that one out for summer. And now I think it's probably time for another waiata. This time we've got Lauren Hill, and she is covering a song by Frankie Valli of all people. This is "You're Just Too Good to Be True," Lauren Hill.
Refugee camp, conspiracy theory, why? Yeah, why? You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you. You be like heaven to touch. I wanna hold you so much. At long last, love has arrived. And I thank God I'm alive. You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you. Caught in the way that I stand. There's nothing else to compare. The sight of you leaves me weak. There are no words left to speak. But if you feel like I feel, please let me know that it's real. You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you.
That was Lauren Hill, "You're Just Too Good to Be True," a cover of Frankie Valli's original of that song. And for those of you who like Lauren Hill, she has a concert on the 16th of February at Spark Arena. You'll remember her 1998 most awesome anthem, "The Miseducation of Miss Lauren Hill." And I'm so lucky to be going to that concert. So she hasn't been around for ages doing much mahi, so it's just going to be good to be able to go and celebrate that earlier album of hers, which really was a kind of late 90s anthem for hip-hop and rap, or feminist hip-hop and rap, I should say. So now I just want to return to the books for summer. Got a couple left before I leave that until next time, when I think I might ask Kirsty to choose some. We'll see what she would come up with. So the ones I want to talk about now, one is called "My Abandonment" by Peter Rock. And it's described by feminist sci-fi writer Ursula Le Guin as a beautiful, strange novel, fascinating and moving. It tells with great tenderness how human love goes wrong. Now, the reason I've chosen this is because it's basically a story about a young teenage girl growing up in the forest with her father, who's kind of been traumatised by a war that he participated in. I don't think we're ever told exactly what war, but it's a contemporary novel, so it could be, Iraq or Afghanistan. So her name is Carolyn. She's 13 years old, and she lives in a forest park with her father in a nature preserve in Portland, Oregon. So we're staying with Oregon, actually. And they sleep in an elaborate cave shelter. They wash in a nearby creek, and they store perishables at the water's edge. And they even keep a library of sorts in their little cave. And in this idyllic wilderness, the only rule they have is that they must not be seen by other people. But when Carolyn makes one small mistake, their entire existence is derailed, and this sets into motion a chain of quite irreversible events. Now, this book, My Abandonment, has been made into a film called Leave No Trace. I haven't seen that, but I have read the book and I was absolutely captivated by it. Mainly, you know, it's beautifully written. It's first-person narrative, but I just want to read to you one of the reasons that it's really evocative of the nature that Carolyn and her father lived in. For most of the novel. This is from page 12 of My Abandonment. Ferns grow up high in the trees too, and the branches, though no higher as where I am in the lookout. Squirrels chitter and chatter, now circling up and down tree trunks after each other. It's an easy climb for me, especially barefoot, the branches mostly like a ladder. The flat platform is almost 100 feet high, Father says, and the bottom, the boards are covered over with branches attached, so you cannot see it from the ground. On the platform I can see all around us. I can see the pale, flat stones that don't look like a path unless you know it's a path, which we step on so we don't make a trail. I can see the place where my hidden garden is hidden, and the branch across the front of our house, which you could never see since the roof can be walked on, and ferns are growing there like the rest of the ground, and even the tiny maples with their five-pointed leaves. Our house is like a cave dug out with the roof made of branches and wire and metal with tarps and plastic on top of that, and then the earth where everything is growing. Only Father and I see it's a house. Kind of gives you an idea of how they're living, but there's some really awesome things that happen with Carolyn in nature and how she kind of views and makes meaning of animals and things that happen in nature that would be quite different from people who weren't actually living there. And it's a real eye-opener, this book, also for urbanites. It's truly beautiful. Kind of sad, so, you know, be prepared for a sad read, but I thoroughly recommend that. And then for those of you who like things a little darker and perhaps a little bit sexier, there is Pigtails, which is an international bestseller. I can't pronounce the author's name. I'm really sorry about that. It seems to be Marie Dariusek. Anyway, I'll spell out the last name. Dariusessek. And this is a book about a woman's... It's a feminist novel, and it's about a woman's transition from... human body to the body of a sow or a female pig. So basically this woman lands a prize position as a masseur at a beauty parlor, and she enjoys extraordinary success at bringing home lots of money from this until she strangely begins to metamorphose into a pig. Time Out has described this book as a fleshy parable about our civilized appetites and our animal desires. Literary Review calls the author's writing brutal, detached, and wonderfully economic. And Vogue has said it's a combination of Metamorphosis by Kafka and Candide with a sprinkling of David Lynch. So, yeah, it's also a first novel, so I found it really astounding that it's a first novel, and it's a radical, ferocious fable about animality, really. So, you know, I'm not going to tell you too much more about it. Although Sarah Dinant from The Observer has written on the first on the cover of it, "If all men are pigs, then what can a woman do but turn into a sow?" And it kind of gives you, yeah, actually, I'm not going to say any more because it's sort of the kind of book that you need to read yourself. But be prepared for some dark elements, and it's also, you know, very feminist and very kind of radical. So, yeah, I'll leave that at that for today, and I think next time we'll see what Kirsty can offer us for summer reading. So let's turn to another song now. This song isn't a cover, but I really wanted to put it in this in the show today because I've just been to Rhea Hall and Rob Ruha's concert last week in Otatahi, and it was absolutely awesome. They were playing, they were singing at the piano. Their band was absolutely awesome. And this song, which Rhea Hall has just released on video, Te Ahikai Pō, is, it has the most amazing video. So, you know, I just think it's important that you check this out. So listen to the song, but then check out the video. It's absolutely awesome. So Te Ahikai Pō is a song which tries to find resolve through times of despair. And it's a, as I said, a new single. It's one of two songs on her new debut album, which are sung in Te Reo Māori. Te Ahikai Pō means the fire burning away the darkness, and it's a reference to finding peace following the aftermath of war. And specifically, Hall is talking about the Battle of Te Ranga in June 1864. This is the inspiration for her song. This was an unplanned slaughter of many Māori. The spiritless attack was in retaliation to the Battle of Pukihinahina, where the British found themselves at a loss to the Māori. So Rhea Hall says, quoting her, "Written by my close friend Te Orapaki and I, this beautifully produced song, produced by the incredible Tiki Tāne, Te Ahikai Pō speaks to finding strength through times of extreme adversity. The Battle of Te Ranga is the inspiration behind this piece. This battle was the price my people paid for victory against the British at Gate Pā some 2 months earlier." Here is Rhea Hall's awesome Te Ahikai Pō.
Tāna tau taua ka whakaikangia ngā Māori ireira. Koeira te hinganga o ngā Māori, te matenga o ngā Māori taua pakanga. Kāre anō kia hōhonu noa o rātau pare pare me rātu mea ka whakaikangia nei rātau. E hoi, e ke hoi ho, kia nei cavalry. Koeira te hunga nā rātau i patu ngā Māori ireira. Nō muri ko ngā infantry, ka mate ngā Māori, ka mutuai ngā pakanga i roto i tēnei takiwā.
Na te aha.
Ngā mihi anō kia koutou. Welcome back to Te Piringa Kararehi. You're here with Annie today. Kirsty's away, we'll be welcoming her back next time. As I mentioned in the intro, I just want to talk briefly about the possum in Aotearoa. Next time I'm going to talk a little bit more in depth about this issue, but I've been looking online at the various news stories about schools where children are encouraged to throw possums, where they're encouraged to dress up possums who are dead, who have been killed as part of a hunt that the school puts on, and thinking a little bit about this and what kind of impact it has on children who, you know, how can we really expect them to know the difference between one cute animal and another cute animal? And we all know, well, we should know about the link between animal abuse and domestic and other social violence. And so we're kind of expecting our children to also make that connection, that it's okay to be cruel to some animals but not others. And I'm kind of thinking about where that leads in terms of that, like how do we teach children empathy when we're encouraging them to be almost like not detached but actually quite ruthless in their understandings about and attitudes towards and their treatment of possums. So I thought, as I said, next time I'm going to talk a little bit more about this, but if you are a parent out there who is worried about this kind of, the general understanding of possums in Aotearoa and how children are growing up with this attitude towards them that's really kind of cruel, I wanted to talk to you or just let you know about a book by an author called Tadpole called Possum Joe. Now, Possum Joe was published in 2003, but it's a kind of counter-narrative to the usual possum stories that we get from authors in New Zealand like Frank Sangston, which are really encouraging children to hunt and kill these animals without any kind of mercy. In Tadpole's Possum Joe, we have the story of an old hunter of the same name, Possum Joe, who finds in one of his traps a young silver-furred talking possum who pleads, as Possum Joe raises his club to kill him, "Please don't hit me, Mr. Hunter. I'm young and want to live my life." And so Possum Joe considers this plea and releases the possum, who races away saying, "I'll remember your kindness." And this happens a couple of more times in the novel with other possums. And then a year later, there's a winter storm and Possum Joe falls down a steep bank and breaks his leg. And he's lying there thinking, well, he's obviously going to die because nobody can help him, when these three possums come back and help him to survive. So the first possum finds them and takes a message from him to the ranger. As the night grows colder, the next possum that he saved comes along and helps him to light a fire. And then finally the last possum joins Possum Joe, and all through the night they talk. And by morning they're good friends. And so when the ranger's helicopter arrives to rescue Possum Joe, the old man smiles happily at his friend the ranger and says, "In future, just call me Joe." And it's a really awesome book teaching empathy to kids, even though you know, it's obvious that there's an issue with possums in nature here. But it's almost like encouraging a connection. And I think if we had those kinds of connections or feelings of compassion and empathy towards pests here, I think we'd actually be able to find much better ways of dealing with them than just demonising them. But I'm going to talk about that next time on the program. There was just a little bit of a taste for what's coming up in next month's Te Piringa Kararehi. And to finish the show today, let's look at the Rawsome pizza that I'm really recommending for your summer picnics or summer dinners. So this is from the Rawsome Vegan Cookbook. And basically it's a veggie crust with avocado, tomato, spinach, basil and onion. So for the crust you're going to need half an onion, 2 cups of sweet corn kernels, 1 zucchini, 1/4 cup of white sesame seeds, 1/4 cup of ground flax seeds, 2 peeled garlic cloves, 1/2 teaspoon of black pepper, quarter teaspoon of chili powder, a quarter teaspoon of cumin powder, 1 teaspoon of dried basil or basil. I'm preferring to say basil these days, I just like it. 1 teaspoon of dried rosemary, 1 teaspoon of dried oregano, 1 tablespoon of miso paste. For the sauce, you're going to need 1/2 cup of dehydrated tomato slices, 1/2 cup of chopped zucchini, 1 tablespoon of fresh lemon juice, 1 handful of fresh basil leaves, 1 date, and 1 garlic clove. And for the toppings, you're going to need 1/4 cup of basil leaves, 1 cup of spinach leaves, 1 diced avocado, 1 diced tomato, 3 tablespoons of tahini, 1/4 onion diced, 1/4 teaspoon of black pepper, 1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder, 2 teaspoons of fresh lemon juice, and whatever else you like. So the author of this recipe has suggested perhaps Brazil nut cheese or any other kind of cheese you want to top it off with. So in order to make this, to make the crust, you put everything in your food processor and you process until it becomes a paste. Then you add the spices more and more as you want, but keep in mind the flavour is going to become intensified after you've baked this. Also add a little olive oil and Himalayan salt if you like. Then you spread the paste onto a lined baking pan, forming it into a pizza crust shape. But leave it quite thick, around 1/3 of an inch or a little less than 1 centimetre, because it's going to shrink a bit. So then you can put it in at about 46 degrees for 7 to 9 hours. This is a slow cooker, or until it's firm all the way through. Alternatively, use the oven at its lowest temperature until you get the same result, which would be around 5 hours. So in the first instance, actually, they recommend using a dehydrator, but you know, I don't even know what that is. I was picking this recipe because I thought it would be very easy for people like me who just don't cook. So I'd be inclined to do the second thing here, which is use the oven at its lower temperature for around 5 hours. Then at this stage, you're going to flip the crust gently. Be careful. It's fragile at this point, and you're going to bake it for one more hour. Or until the whole thing is crispy and holds its shape. Then let the crust sit out for 1 to 2 hours to cool down. Now, that's the crust, and you know it's going to be real yummy because it's got all these extra things in it. But if you're like me, not that kind of person to go to all that trouble, then you can just probably get a vegan crust from somewhere else. But actually, it does sound extra special if you make it. So to make the sauce, put all the ingredients in the food processor or blender and blend until smooth. Spread the sauce on your crust and don't use too much because this will make the crust real soggy. And then decorate with whatever toppings you like, and away you go. And it's best to eat right away. So it looks really gorgeous. The picture looks absolutely beautiful. Wouldn't look like that if I cooked it, but anyway, it does in this book, so that's very appetizing. Okay, so we're coming to the end of the program, and I want to finish off with a really special Waiata. Of course, you all know that I'm massively into Prince, probably his number one fan in the entire world. So this comes from a recent release. An album recently released called Piano and a Microphone 1983, and this was released on September 21st of this year. It's a posthumous studio album by Prince. It's been released on CD, vinyl and digital formats, and it's the first album that's been released by the Prince estate. Now, it features, those of you who are Prince fans will know about the vault, his hidden area full of all kinds of, like, thousands of songs and other music that he made that he didn't release. So this features previously unreleased material from his archive, The Vault. And one of the songs on it, oh, also to let you know that this was all recorded in 1983, and all it is Prince, when he was, how old would he have been there? Probably in his late 20s, mid-20s, recording with a piano and a microphone. So it's old stuff. It's him when he was younger, and it's just the piano. One of the songs he plays on this is a dedication, I guess, to Joni Mitchell and her song, A Case of You, which is my favourite song of Joni Mitchell's. And in fact, when we saw Prince at his piano and a microphone concert in 2016 in Auckland, Prince mentioned that Joni Mitchell was one of his favourite artists, and that when he was really, really young, he'd actually got up on the stage and had to be removed by security when she was at when she was playing at a conference, because he liked her so much. So this is his kind of special dedication to her, A Case of You. And in fact, if I just go back to the original by Joni Mitchell, this was actually written around about 1970. It appears on Joni Mitchell's album Blue, and it's often been cited that it's her breakup with Graham Nash that was the inspiration for the song, but then it's also been claimed that the song is about Leonard Cohen. So it's not too sure. We're not too sure about that, but she did perform the song for the first time at the Amcheka Greenpeace Benefit Concert in October 1970. And it features Mitchell playing Appalachian dulcimer, accompanied by James Taylor on acoustic guitar. This is in the original. Now, the original's really awesome, but I'm about to make a statement which might make some people cringe out there, but I actually think Prince's cover of this is the most beautiful version I've heard. So I want to dedicate this to my partner of 27 years, Philip. He's also my partner in dog, cat, chicken, sparrow, parrot, and possum rescue. This is for you, Philip. A Case of You by Prince.
Steve.
Wehina, gorgeous version of a beautiful song, and that was for Philip. And now it's time to say haerera, till next time, mā te wā.